What up, Long Beach? Welcome to our new and improved weekly podcast as part of our partnership with the Long Beach Post. We're still the 562.org, and yes, we're still the only local show that covers the Long Beach schools, their sports teams, and our community at large. But we figured with all the burning questions piling up as we all emerge from these COVID-19 closures, it's the perfect time to try to answer some of those questions. So on this episode of What Up Long Beach, we're asking the question, is it safe for youth sports to come back? Mike, you and your son Vincent were back at baseball practice this weekend, actually, out there at El Dorado Park. Did it feel safe for you guys and really everybody involved?
Yeah, I mean, it felt safe to me, absolutely. You know, it's outdoors, which I think is the most important thing. All the kids were wearing masks. All the coaches were wearing masks, socially distanced. Parents weren't allowed to sit on the bleachers. Like, it certainly didn't feel like a return to regular life, but it did feel like a return to life, which if you've got a seven-year-old, a social seven-year-old like I do, it was really an invaluable feeling to get to see him out there with some other kids his own age. And I was very grateful to the Long Beach Health Department and the Parks and Recs and the leagues like LAYBS that my kids are in for working together to come up with a safe way to get, you know, they're not allowed to play games. They're not allowed to play in a competition against each other, but just the practice definitely was wonderful for my family.
Tyler, you and I have both written stories about how hard it was for Parks and Rec and the health department to work together to get these kids back on the field. I think I wrote the first one in May, and it was like, okay, right around the corner, here it comes. And then I think you wrote the most recent one last month. So it's been a long road back.
No doubt. And, you know, there's challenges keep arising, right? Because you're dealing with a lot of different factors. You know, it's a multi-layered problem, as people have said. You know, you're dealing with, you know, new results from science, you know, because you're reacting to what the data is telling you. You're also reacting to the behavior that you're witnessing, people that are following the rules or maybe aren't following the rules. You don't necessarily know where those people are from. And so it could be your community could be doing everything right, and then someone could be coming in and doing something that is not approved or not advised or against the science. And so it really just calls out what a community really is and how we have to depend on each other and inform one another and be working on the same page. And sometimes it feels like people are working on whatever page they like best. That is does not lead to desirable results. So it's a very tough job. It's a very tough thing for us to figure out, but I think day by day we're doing our best, and it's great to get those small victories when that are the kids are small, but the victories are big when they can go out there and be around each other and get some semblance of normal life. Because it's a shame what's happened to these kids. They haven't done anything to deserve it. The little ones that are, you know, 5, 6 years old and have had their world completely changed by something they had nothing to do with.
It's a small but mighty victory.
No doubt.
You're right, Tyler. Mike, did you feel like the other parents that you were talking to shared your opinion that they also felt safe to be back out there with their kids?
It's all about the opt-in, right? If you didn't feel safe doing it, then you didn't sign your kids up for it. And I think that's why, to me, the most important thing as we look at, you know, as Dr. Fauci and other experts are saying, probably a 2021 that has this virus around for at least the first half of the year, I think we all as a society have to decide. I don't think any of us psychologically are going to make it through another 12 months like this, right? So it's all about the opt-in. It's about the LVUSD giving kids the option. Hey, if you don't feel safe, if your parents don't feel safe, you can do this at home. If you do think that the risk is worth it to go back and be with kids, be with your friends and see your teachers in person, then you can opt back in starting January 28th, right? And so I think whether we're talking about Halloween or baseball practice, that's the main thing is, the other parents did feel safe, but they were also the parents who signed their kids up, right? And so I know that not every parent did, and I very much understand that, certainly. Like, I think one thing as parents or even just as friends, the three of us, like, everyone has to navigate the fact that you're never going to be on exactly the same page with your spouse or with your friends or with the parents of your kids' friends, right? So we just sort of all do the best we can. But, yeah, I think what everyone was talking about was, it's so sad to see them in the masks or, oh, I wish that it was normal, but look at how happy they are, you know, getting to play catch with other kids and getting something back, you know.
Speaking of the parents, I think the most important thing here is crowd control. And I don't even just mean for youth sports. I think that's across the board. The amount of people in places for a certain amount of time seems to be one of the only consistents when it comes to the science that's coming out about COVID and the fact that we really don't know as much as we should already. So if it is large groups of people that seem to be the problem, the large groups of people do come to sporting events, right? And obviously youth sports is so based on the idea that the parents get to see the kids have their parents there or their grandparents or their aunts and uncles and their friends and all that stuff. So I think the crowd control of youth sports is as important as just getting the kids back on the field. You know, having a game against another team is just going to double the amount of parents there. I think that the practices and keeping those crowds away from the kids is something that should be held for a while. Let them keep practicing for a while where it's just the same, you know, whatever it is, 10 to 15 parents who come to the practices, that it's just the same people all the time. And it's not doubled to where it's 30 or 40 people mixing together. And then days later, they're mixing together with a different group and a different group. Crowd control, I feel, is the most important part to bringing youth sports back. How do you guys feel?
I think the biggest thing about is that when you say youth sports, that you're referring to such a wide array of things. I would have had no problem with my son playing in a game last weekend because you're talking about El Dorado Park, where, you know, it's very easy to have you go from 15 parents to 30 parents and still have 6 feet of space between everybody. But if you're talking about a club volleyball match, say, where there's more kids, there's more parents, they're in an enclosed space, and maybe they're at a middle school or something where, you know, there's limited bleachers and, you know, all that. See, that to me, as a parent, I'd be less comfortable with that. For me, outdoors with plenty of room, you know, you could have a rugby game and pretty easily distance around that, right? Even though that's obviously a full contact sport. But the, in terms of the parent control, like that, that's my thing, is it's just, it's so dependent on the time and the place and, you know, what kind of a crowd you're going to get.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. I think the difference between inside and outside is massive when we're talking about this. And, you know, it's like, if we're thinking of high school sports where, you know, a high school kid just stays at school by themselves and goes to their game, or they get dropped off or whatever, but T-ball kind of needs the parents there. So there's not really an option to not have the parents there with their kids. So there's a different challenge there.
There were plenty of kids at the baseball field who didn't have parents there, just because, you know, if you've got, my wife and I have a 7-year-old and a soon to be 5-year-old, but if you've got, say you've got like quadruplets or something, we do have friends who have quadruplets. That's your first chance to go grocery shopping by yourself in 6 months, you know? So there were definitely kids who got dropped off and the parents were like, I have 90 minutes, you know, of quiet time,
right,
of errands, or go home and take a nap or whatever. So
go home and take a nap seems more likely than going to the store if you've got quadruplets at home.
It just depends on the motion in your ocean, Jage.
Obviously, as Mike mentioned, his column about going to that practice with his son is up at the 562.org right now, and everything at the 562.org is brought to you by Naples Rib Company. Obviously, support your local businesses.
Naples Rib Company, like all businesses in Long Beach, having to adapt and survive, and they've been doing a great job. Their outdoor dining patio is the best in the city. They've got TVs out there so you can watch the football games. Obviously, everyone is missing that feeling of the fall coming and getting to hang out with your friends and watch some football. So get down to Naples Rib Company. You can eat outdoors, you can take it to go, which is what my wife and I have been doing. Always good to get your taste of Naples as summer is officially drawing to a close.
We've been the keepers of our own history at the 562.org, and this summer we've lost a lot. One of the things we lost is the annual tradition of counting up the championships won by Long Beach youth sports teams. And since we were talking about youth sports already, it's a perfect time to plug our top 10 youth sports teams of the decade list that you'll find at the 562.org right now. Our two most recent are two pretty memorable baseball teams. We pretty much let everybody nominate who they wanted, and we got a lot of baseball nominations. These ones were pretty obvious. The 2012 Long Beach Pony World Champions. I mean, if you're the world champion or something, you're probably going to make the list.
Literally the world champion. Unlike Major League Baseball, they literally are playing the best teams from around the world.
Hey, we got Canada.
And then you've got the Uptown Long Beach 10 and under All-Stars, who made history by winning a state tournament in their first year in the Cal Ripken League, which is very impressive because Cal Ripken is basically the other league if you're not playing Little League. So they got in there, and in their first year, they were SoCal champs. Pretty impressive. But they made that list for a couple reasons. Like, the list has community involvement already in it, but they even got more community involvement because they're from Uptown. You know, a lot of those parents aren't going to be able to provide the travel money necessary for these kids to play elite baseball. But then they win the SoCal tournament, so they get sent to Hawaii And as Coach Jeff Champlin said, most of these kids could never afford to go to Hawaii. So they had to start a GoFundMe. They had to raise some money. Our own Maryland Bull, who's obviously a sponsor of the 562.org, helped them with a huge donation of $5,000 to get them to Hawaii. So they needed to make that list because they really brought out the best in the sports community, which is so awesome. And then that pony team, I mean, come on. You got kids like Jacob Huey, Spencer Steer. Those are true local boys. You know what I mean? Most of that team that ended up winning that 2012 World Championship played together on a travel ball team when they were too young to play for pony. And the name of that team? The Long Beach Dirt Clods. That's so Long Beach. I absolutely love it.
Can't handle it. No, I think that's a great point, JJ. And as you mentioned about that Uptown team, like just what a great microcosm of the city and, you know, such a diverse group. And you don't always see that on baseball fields, especially at the highest levels. And so, you know, to be able to see that is pretty awesome. And it just speaks to what Long Beach is. It's so diverse. And we love, you know, kids pursuing their dreams and getting new opportunities through sports that they wouldn't have otherwise. That's why we love signing day so much. And it's, you know, it's just a great thing to see. And it's great that we're able to relive it. And, you know, not just for those families, but for, you know, other people looking on and having these positive memories to reflect on.
It's impossible to work on these stories and not think of my own youth sports. Most of them like really disappointing, but there's still a couple in there that I always think of and smile. Do you guys have any youth sports memories where you're just like, I'll never forget that one day in that one YMCA basketball game or something like that? Tyler's shaking his head. You got one, Ty?
I do have one. There, I'll start at the game prior. So I was at Los Altos Little League and I got ejected from a game.
No.
Because there was a ball to the wall. I was at second base. One of my teammates hit a ball to the fence. I was rounding third. The catcher was standing flat-footed, both feet on home plate. So I'm running home, waving him, like, move, move. I'm trying to score. The ball's still in the outfield. He doesn't move and is covering the plate with both of his feet. So I'm like, hey, like, get out of the way. He doesn't move.
Don't get on the tracks when the train's coming through.
So I ran him over because he's blocking the plate, and I had a teammate behind me. So I scored, and we were celebrating running back to our dugout, and the umpire said, hey, number 18, you're out of here. And I was like, what? So flash forward, the very next game that we play, the same home plate umpire.
Hold on. Thus began a lifelong hatred of authority.
No. I don't even know who this guy is. It could have, but I got the last laugh, and I'll tell you why. So the very next game that we played, he was the home plate umpire, and I was pitching, and I threw a no-hitter.
Mm. Oh, wow. Oh, very nice.
So on the same field. So that
Did he
was,
give you
that
the quarters?
My memory is really
– Did he give you the quarters? Is it a problem?
No. But that is my great, like, youth sports memory is throwing a no-hitter. I was also 3-for-3 at the plate. And somehow I had a triple, so there must have been an error involved somewhere because I was never fast enough.
What about you, Mike? I bet yours is basketball.
You know what? I was lucky enough growing up in Long Beach to play for really, really good youth coaches, some of whom ended up being varsity high school coaches that we've covered. But no, my top one actually would be soccer. I was on some really good basketball teams at the YMCA at Carson and Woodruff.
A rebounding machine, Mike Garnabas.
Yeah.
A lot of elbows involved.
Career high 13 points, hard fouls on demand. But my top sports memory, a team I was on that was actually really good was I think we were 10 years old, but the AYSO soccer team I was on, we were called the Stud Muffins, based out of Hartwell Park. And we ended up being the tri-sectional champions, not trisexual, which was obviously the joke among all the 10-year-olds.
Obviously.
You just got to add another section, right? You just need to add another section.
Or merge the tri-sectional champion, and to be clear, like Southern California, there are so many regions of AYSO soccer. We won our region. We won the city, because I think there's three regions in Long Beach. We won the city championship. We won the sectional championship, which is like LA and the Inland Empire counties. And then the tri-sectional champions means we were the best out of like everything below the Bay Area, like Central California, LA County, down to San Diego, we won. And it was like, I was not very good on the team. I was like a sub midfielder.
But that was a really, really good team. The whole Moore League basically ended up being like the all league teams when I was in high school were kids that were on that one team with me. And we had a game in, I want to say it was the sectional semifinals where we beat a team in overtime and their parents, this is a true story. You can confirm this with my mom since you both know her. Their parents lined up on the other side of the field and flipped us off. Dead serious, like on the way back to, and I always think of stuff like that when we get, because I, as you guys know, I think sometimes we can get a little too caught up in sportsmanship stuff. That was the funniest thing that had ever happened to me in 10 years of being alive. And like anyone that I ever run into from that team, we would laugh about like, do you remember when those crazy ass parents lined up and flipped off a bunch of 10-year-olds?
There's nothing that makes crazy ass parents more angry when they're angry than you laughing at their anger.
Oh, and we, oh my God. I mean, we obviously, like we're 10 years old. Our parents were all furious and we're just all cracking up. Like, I mean, it was the first sorry about it moment of my life. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good one. I'll do mine real quick. Mine's kind of like Tyler. It was the first great moment of my life in sports. And it was because I had grown up wanting great moments in sports. I was playing on a baseball team. We weren't very good. Me and my friend, Matt Doherty, were kind of the only good kids on the team, but we were in last place and we were playing the first place team, and the first place team's over in their dugout messing around before the game, right? Just like kids would do. But then I took all of the sports movies I had ever seen and I combined it into one speech, and I called the team together. And the speech was basically like, guys, they're not taking us seriously. All right, this is our time to shine. This is we're not going to the playoffs. This is our moment. Let's make a memory, right?
Hold on. How old were you?
Oh, we were probably 11.
10 or 11. Okay, yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah, so I give him the old Rudy. I'll give him the old Rudy speech. And we go out there, and my friend Matt, shout out to Matt, who actually still works in Parks and Rec. It was at Wheatfield, and he throws an incredible game. I play second. I go 2 for 3. I score the winning run. We win like 1-0 or something like that. First time we ever get in the newspaper. Huge upset is the headline. Yeah, it was great, man.
Wow.
It was great. I just remember that speech so vividly. Like, this is what I've trained my whole life for. Watching Major League every week for the last 5 years of my life.
Wow.
I can so clearly hear you giving that speech at 11 years, full of like genuine, like, I can't believe they're not taking you seriously.
Genuine piss and vinegar coming out of Fiddler. Yeah.
I was just Jake Taylor in that moment, dude. What else have we got to do?
Win the whole freaking thing.
Just across the news desk, we don't actually have a news desk and we don't have a news ticker, but if we did have a news ticker, this is what would be coming across it. Obviously, the Long Beach Unified School District announced last week that they were going to be closed until January 28th. We will see over the next couple months what metrics they have in place to determine whether kids can go back to school for the second half of the school year. I will say that from a number of high-ranking district officials I have talked to, that is very much their plan. I've seen a lot of parents and teachers on Facebook sort of writing off the idea like, oh, no, this school year is a wrap. That is very much not what the LBUSD is planning for. So we will certainly do everything we can to keep you updated on what that looks like as we get closer to that date.
Over at Long Beach State, we mentioned last week that the men's and women's basketball teams are in a sort of quarantine right now. They're a little mini bubble. And then they're going to take some tests and hopefully they're going to be able to do some outdoor activities together on campus on October 1st. After 2 weeks of that, still testing negative, they would be able to then go back inside Walter Pyramid and actually have real basketball practice. That is huge news. Like I said, we talked about it last week. We've got stories and a conversation with Andy Fee, the athletic director over at Long Beach State, on our LB Fee Show podcast that you can listen to right now, available at the website. But yeah, fingers crossed. I guess no news is good news from Long Beach State right now. We don't want to hear anything from them until October 1st when we can go out there.
Are we going?
I mean, I'll take a telephoto lens and stand on top of the parking structure and take pictures of practice if that's what it takes.
We'll climb the pyramid. You get a full 360-degree view from the top of the pyramid.
Scale it like the climber on Price is Right, where you don't want to send him over the edge. Just got a couple of sticks just stabbing into the thing. It already leaks anyway. Although technically it's not a leak, apparently. It's condensation from the air conditioning, allegedly. But, you know, who's getting up there to check? You feel me? All right. My news.
That's so a deep cut. Keep going, Tyler.
Did we close the book? Anyway, So the NFL is back, baby. So that's means a couple good things. Number one, it's obviously great to see all the former Moore League and Long Beach guys out there doing their thing on the football field. It's great to see Juju back in the end zone doing hilarious touchdown dances, of course. But obviously for local sports bars as well, NFL Sundays are big days for them financially. It's not quite what it used to be. So I have a story coming out in a couple days, just talking about how they're dealing with it, the new normal, I guess, as far as watching sports in public, but just trying to keep places afloat. You know, we talk to a lot of business owners these days and everyone's kind of struggling, and it's every sector you go to, there's a different set of challenges, but you know, we're trying to figure out and get through it. And it is nice to have, you know, some community involvement as far as, hey, there's sports on, let's go watch them together, even if we're outside or having to be apart. So those few returns to normalcy are nice, and hopefully the businesses around the city that we know and love can find a way to weather this thing.
We've also had a return to normalcy because we're actually talking about schedules. The football schedules for the Moore League are coming out, and Mike's been releasing those once a week. We've got Long Beach Poly up, Milliken up, Wilson up. I think you got Lakewood coming next, right, Mike?
Lakewood's coming, and then St. Anthony. And then I'm really actually excited to write the Cabrillo one because their coach has been in a really unique situation where he got hired after the shutdown happened, which means he went several months before he was able to even sort of introduce himself to his team. And as you can imagine, anytime you take over a program like the one at Cabrillo, it takes some work to get it going again. And I think that's going to be one of the big stories of this year is like, how do you recruit new players for the team? How do you build that program from the ground level up when you're not able to even, you know, talk to your kids in person?
This week is a big week for the 562.org, as well as all of the other nonprofits here in the city of Long Beach. On Thursday, that's September 24th, that's Long Beach Gives Day. It's 24 hours of giving where the Long Beach community steps up and contributes to nonprofits across the city. The 562.org, fortunate to be one of the just over 150 nonprofits in Long Beach included in this year's event. It's the first time the 562 has been involved with Long Beach Gives, and we're very excited to be part of this initiative to help support local nonprofits and what they give to the community. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to raise money. We'll be all over social media on Thursday, just letting you know we'll have a link where you can give to the 562 if you're able. All those contributions are tax deductible. And guys, this nonprofit model that we're doing here, it's a little unique in journalism, but it kind of looks like this might be the future where communities decide this is something that we care about. We want to keep it around. These are the people that we trust to bring us accurate and informative news. And so now we have to fund that, right?
Absolutely. And also, if you're unable to give, but you're listening to this and you come to the website and you enjoy the coverage, share it. Share that news about Long Beach Gives. The more we spread the word about the 562.org, the more we're going to be able to provide for Long Beach, its schools, its sports teams, and the community at large. So please let everybody know about Long Beach Gives. And also just let everybody know about the 562.org and Long Beach Post and all the great news coverage that's going on in this city, because we couldn't do it without you. So with that, we're going to wrap this episode up and we will talk to you next week. Please share the news about Long Beach Gives and let us know that you did by sharing it with us on social media. So for Mike and for Tyler and for JJ and everybody at all of those websites I just mentioned.
And for all the kids and parents in the city of Long Beach, whether you're a frustrated second grader or a bored out of your mind senior in high school, we see you and hear you, and hit us up. We're going to keep telling your stories.
Stay safe, Long Beach. We'll talk to you soon.